Hello, good people. You're listening to Mission Possible. I'm Sheila Murphy, Chief Mobilizer for Mission to Mobilization, focused on changing perception for returning citizens. 4.5 million of our brothers and sisters are living in the country, and we are talking to some of them. We see their resilience, share their success stories, and talk about the amazing things they are doing to positively impact our communities. You will also be inspired by Coach Nate's battle plan, as this author and speaker encourages us to live our best life now. This week's Mission Possible guest is Valentino Dixon. After a 27-year wrongful murder conviction, Valentino was exonerated by the help of some Georgetown University students. But no one can tell his remarkable story like he can. So please welcome to the show, Valentino Dixon. Hey, Valentino.
Hey, Sheila.
Yeah, how you
doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right.
Me too.
Yeah. So to get us started, I just wanted, you know, for the listeners that don't know, if you could just give a kind of a quick overview of your case and incarceration and then kind of remarkable release.
Well, I spent 27 years in prison for a crime I did not commit. At the time, the police realized 2 days after my arrest that I didn't commit the crime. 8 witnesses came forward, cleared me of the crime, and the person responsible for the crime confessed to the police. All of these people were disregarded, and they had took my clothes, my car. They realized within days that I didn't fire a weapon. The DA did not disclose this evidence until 27 years later.
Wow. Wow.
And I've been out now for 8 months.
Okay.
And about 13 days.
Wow. Okay. Right. Counting the days. No.
Yeah.
I, you know, I've heard your story, and I mean, it really is unbelievable. I mean, in a lot of cases. And I wanted you to also just talk briefly about your mindset as you were incarcerated and how that really helped you upon your release.
Well, my mind state, you know, my first 7 years was like really like non-productive because I was in a state of depression. I didn't have a positive outlook about anything. I was so mad and angry and upset and didn't understand why this happened to me. But, you know, God started to slowly touch my heart. And after the 7th year, I started reading, I started studying, I went to college. You know, I was always a good artist as a kid, so I took up art again. So I started making myself very productive inside prison, and I just took off. I just started becoming very busy 24 hours a day. You know, I didn't waste a second after that. So my last 20 years of prison was like just reading all day long, drawing all day, mentoring other inmates, talking to gang members, you know, trying to make the prison conditions better, putting together my own vision, reading over 1,000 books. Because, coming out of prison, you see that there's no real opportunities or jobs available. So I made up my mind then that let me just read as many business books as possible. I'm going to be an entrepreneur upon my release. I'm going to speak to people and inform them about prison reform. Because a lot of times it's just a lot of rhetoric, a lot of talk that people just don't understand. So my thing is sentencing reform. That's my main issue because we have some of the most harsh sentencing excessive laws in the country, you know. And then on top of it, the system is not designed or equipped to give the poor person a fair trial. And we all know who's in prison. It's minorities, it's poor people who didn't receive a fair trial to begin with.
Right.
You know, so take into factor all of these things, you know, and then you look at the environment that a person comes from. So I'm not just speaking from a perspective of actual innocence. You know, I'm speaking from a perspective of poverty, coming from an economic devastation, a shameful neighborhood that just look like junkyards. There's no jobs. There's no hope. You know, so nearly all my childhood friends, they either came to prison or, you know, they end up dying in the streets.
Which is crazy. It is crazy. I want you to talk about the challenges that you see, because you started to hit upon that a little bit now, that, you know, returning citizens are facing once they get out, because your mindset was different. I do want to talk about some different things that people can do. But when you got out, or when returning citizens get out in general, what are some of the main issues that you're finding?
Well, I was one of the fortunate ones. I'm not going to say lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, I was one of the fortunate ones because I have a different mind state, and I knew that there was a book that was wrote, and it explained that there's over 10,000 obstacles for a felon to getting a job upon release. And I just said, I'm not going to deal with all of that. I'm not going to beg anybody for a job. But others don't have the spirit that I have. You know, it is no fault of their own because people are human beings and everybody's different. So, you know, what I see guys facing, I have a friend that just got out 6 months ago after 33 years.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. And he had such a hard time. He just got a job a little while ago, but he had such a hard time getting a job. There's no programs. There's nothing that allows the person to re-enter into society to become a productive citizen, a taxpayer, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You know, we need government funding for this. You know, Martin Luther King said it best. In order to change the conditions of a people, you need government funding for jobs, for better housing, for schooling. This is the only way that this problem can be fixed. You know, it's not black culture or black people or minorities, you know, that, you know, are what you call, you know, people that don't know how to control themselves, et cetera, et cetera. All of this stuff basically comes down to the lack of funds for poor people in the inner cities, the ghettos of America. And it's just that simple.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're so right. And really, in conjunction with that, you know, one of the things that you did differently is prepare yourself for release, because you knew, I mean, you said you knew that there were not going to be the resources. You didn't want to beg for a job. And so you started thinking about and doing something about, you know, your preparation prior to you getting released. Exactly. And you know, it goes hand in hand. I think that because sometimes most times we recognize that someone is not going to help us. I mean, they may or may not help us.
Right. But, and let me just say this also, Sheila. Mm-hmm. See, the system has set people up to fail upon release.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That person that's on parole, for example, can't get a driver's license for the first 6 months. Are you kidding me? How do you even travel around? How do you get around? You can't have a driver's license?
Right.
I mean, there's so many other, you know, obstacles in the way. There's so many obstacles in the way that it's ridiculous. And it's just unfair. It's just wrong.
It is. It is. And so pre-release for someone that's listening, that is either has some family member that's locked up and they're hearing this, what would you say to them to maybe give them, you know, 2-3 things that they could be doing in preparation to come out?
I mean, the individual that's in prison right now, whether he's getting out in 6 months or 6 years, it's never too late. You can start right now. You choose something that you like to do and you study on it. I mean, there's books on everything that you can possibly have or want to do. You just can't sit in prison and not, you know, utilize your time.
Right.
You know, it's all about building your mind. And, you know, you don't have to spend 20 years like I did. I just was on a mission.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't know if I was going to have to do the 40-year sentence. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to utilize every day and make the most of it. You know, however, if a guy is getting out in 6 months, 3 months, it's still not too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mind is, a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Right.
You know, so it's all about reaching out to people on the outside before you get there.
Okay.
You know, reaching out to people on the outside before you get there. You know, developing a strategy and a plan on what you want to do with yourself once you get there.
And you and I have talked a lot about, you know, family and how important family is to you.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
I want you to talk about family support for someone that is incarcerated but really wants to get out. How important is that, and what does that look like?
Well, I want to mobilize people because this is the only way we can get any real progress. And this is why Martin Luther King was so powerful, because he brought people together. You know, we're so spread out, everybody's doing their own thing, and we're not really making any significant progress. So the families of the incarcerated, it's extremely important for them to get involved. And I would like to see the families of incarcerated do a march on Washington, you know, and when millions of family members say, hey, this is not just, it's not equal, and, you know, and it's not fair. And we need Congress to act now, not later. We need laws passed now. You know that we have the worst sentencing laws in the world, some of the worst sentencing laws in the world. And this is why we have over 2 million prisoners, because they're giving people too much time, you know, and they don't refuse to release anybody because it's a numbers game. It's all about the investment, the greed. greed and the money for a certain class of people, you know, and it's going to take the families of the incarcerated. And this is my mission now, to bring the families of incarcerated together and say, hey, on this date, we're going to come together and we're going to march on Washington on this date. So I'm putting together some things right now, you know, and developing a strategy so that we can make that a reality. You know, and it's people like Jay-Z, Meek Mills, with millions and millions of followers and fans, Kim Kardashian, these people that are trying to do the best that they can do. I want to kind of guide them and say, hey, this is what you guys should be doing to have a stronger impact on the judicial system.
I love it. I love it. I mean, that's good stuff.
Yeah. And thank you.
Yes. You have the ability and you are influencing people. And I want to just hear from your perspective. If you had the opportunity to go into kind of the homes or radio, TV, whatever, in the hearts of the American people and tell them, you know, one thing, what would that be?
Well, what I would pose a question to everybody. I would say everybody in America to imagine this. Imagine young black men going off to college and landing good jobs and young white men going off to prison. You couldn't imagine this because it wouldn't happen. It would be a national emergency. The problem would get fixed immediately. Martin Luther King said it best. He said that we have to not ignore the suffering and oppression of others, and that everybody deserves the same care and compassion and concern as the next race, next class of people. This is an American problem, you know, and everybody should care, even if they have no ties to the criminal justice system. You know, this is a human rights issue. These are constitutional violations against poor people and civil rights violations against poor people. And we need America to act now, not later.
And Valentina, one of the issues that I always see or hear just in this work is how people... There, you know, you've got the camp of people that really do care and want to help. But then you have another group of people that are afraid. I mean, there is the whole fear-based mentality that we have in our country. And how would you speak to that?
Well, there's always going to be a fierce resistance when you don't understand something fully. Mm-hmm. Okay. The criminal justice system has made people believe that it's best to just keep people locked up, the country would be safe, and that is totally false. Okay. You have people that have been given 20-year life sentences and are still doing 40 years out for 20-year sentence. Mm-hmm. And especially in New York State, there's over 9,000 prisoners that's over the age of 65.
Wow.
Yeah. And I locked around a lot of these guys. I was in prison with these guys. Most of these guys have health problems. They can't move. You know, they have glaucoma. They can't see. And they satisfy all the requirements to be released. And the system is used to release them because it keeps jobs and it keeps money and opportunities for a small class of people, you know, while everybody else suffers. And, you know, and that's what it comes down to.
It does. And so it's dynamic and it's so many components, but it requires people like yourself, those that have been, have served time, as well as community members, family members that see the issues and want to address them as well.
Let me expound a little more, okay? Because I kind of got sidetracked in my brain. My brain is just always moving a certain type of way.
That's all right.
Okay. Michelle Alexander said it best. She says, you know when something is racist, but without racist language, it's hard to prove.
Right.
Okay. Now, I try to stay away from that type of language,
okay?
Because I know that people will run away from that, especially conservative Republican folks, whether black or white, who just don't want to hear the race issue connected with the judicial system. It's easy for them to ignore it and say, oh, no, the discriminatory, the bias, the racism doesn't exist. You know, when we know it does, okay? We know it does. So prove us wrong. I want to ask Congress, hey, some people say that you guys don't have the gene for compassion or sympathy or understanding. Prove people wrong that you do have the gene for these qualities and do the right thing. In comparison to China, their population is 10 times more than ours, but they only have 1 million prisoners.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
England, for example, and I like to use these statistics because it's important. England and Wales combined have 56 people with life on parole. That's life without parole.
56.
And 56 people. England and Wales combined have 56 people that has life without parole. In the U.S., there's 49,000 people with life without parole.
Wow.
Imagine that. I mean,
right. I'm speechless practically.
Right. And a 10-year sentence over here is only 2 years in England, Wales, Denmark, Norway. It's only 2 years for a 10-year sentence here for the same crime, the same offense. So what they're doing is they're giving people so much excessive time, which violates our Constitution, the Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment. It's a total violation. And you're giving people this type of time so that you can keep them locked in the system. And those that don't get that type of time are on parole, and the parole refuses to let them off of parole even after appropriate time has passed.
And then also keeping them, as you mentioned earlier, because it's beneficial. I mean, the prison industrial complex is a $27 billion dollar industry.
Right.
I mean, so that's major.
And another thing, Martin Luther King said it best, and I always like to use some of his quotes because I believe that he was the greatest man that we've known and encountered in our time, or ever, period, in history.
Yeah.
What he said was, people are victims of intellectual and spiritual blindness. They know not what they do. He said, even though slave owners were not necessarily evil people, they were just blinded by greed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I would like to correlate the two in regards to prison reform, because those in charge, whether it's politicians, state officials, prison officials, parole board, you know, I'm not going to call them evil people.
Right.
You know, but I want to say that they are blinded by greed. This is why we have this fierce resistance to make the system more fair.
Yes. And you are that. I mean, that's the great, what I love about you and the great work that you're doing is that you are sharing your message, and you're sharing it in a way that is respectful and informed. And that is what, that's what's needed. That's what I think that's critical.
Right.
You know, well, you're welcome. You're welcome. I've gotten to know you, and I want to just maybe have you share one other thing before we prepare to wrap up.
Okay.
I really love your relationship with your grandmother. I just think that is just so beautiful.
And
I know I didn't ask you that, or I didn't prepare you for that question.
No, that's cool.
You know, but I want you to talk about her and just the kind of relationships that you have with her, and maybe some of the things that you do that so our listeners can learn that side of you, too.
Well, when I grew up in the 70s, my grandmother, we all lived in one house.
Okay.
I got six aunts. I have a bunch of cousins. I'm the only child by my mother.
Okay.
So we all grew up in one house. My grandmother cooked our breakfast. She prepared us for school. After school, she went up our homework with us. Our mothers were too busy running around, being young, doing whatever they were doing at the time. You know, it wasn't until about 11 or 12 years old, everybody started moving out and going their own separate ways. So when I came home after 27 years, you know, my grandmother's house was not in a good condition. Her couch, kitchen table, wobbly, barely standing up. Her basement had flooded. Everything was still molded down there. So I had to spend like 3 weeks, you know, me and a couple friends of mine clearing out everything. I bought her some furniture, you know, all of that stuff. Christmas came around. I got her a big tree, got her some gifts, cooked her breakfast, dinner, Thanksgiving, the same thing. And I'm traveling in and out of town speaking, but I'm over there every day if I can when I'm in town. I was just sitting with her yesterday because nobody really goes over there. My mother and them, they, you know, they go when they can or whatever. They try to do whatever they can, but she's basically by herself with a nurse's aide. She still lives in her own house, which is good. I make these pretty, you know, these little cute videos of me and her rubbing her feet, doing whatever to make her feel good. She's 91 years old.
Wow.
You know, she's 91 years old. You know, she has most of her senses most of the time. Her Alzheimer's kick in maybe once or twice a week, maybe. And she's pretty sharp for a 91-year-old. And she has a birthday coming up next week on June 15th.
But
I have a ton of cousins. They almost never go over to her house. You know, they might see her once a year or whatever. And I just don't think that's right. You know, I did some gardening in her yard last week, planted some flowers, cut down all the bushes. You know, just do everything that you should do for these people who was there for us. So I just think it's big and it's very important to, you know, to be there for your grandparents or your mother or whoever else that was there for you. And that I didn't get to where I am because it's just me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? These are the people that, you know, help mold us and make us who we are. And a lot of times we forget that.
That is so true. And, you know, I mean, the proverb that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. And really just being reared in that environment with having parents and grandparents and family members, that does shape us. And it has shaped you and even you being able to share who you are and
right.
be able to identify, you know, with her and all that you have gone through is a testament to her life, you know,
yes.
and to yours
yeah.
as well.
And you know what's crazy, Sheila? The nurse's aide told me about a week ago. She said, you know what? I've never seen a grandson like you. And she said, I think you gave your grandmother a whole lot more time to live. Because without you coming home, we didn't know how much more time she had left. But now I don't think she's going nowhere.
Wow. That's beautiful. I mean, that is beautiful. And that is what we need. We need love. We need
yeah.
support. Everyone does. Everyone needs
right.
it. And so your grandmother is no different. But you basically,
yeah.
I believe that she is reaping what she's
uh-huh.
sown into your life many, many, many years ago. You know, and
yeah.
I thank God for that.
Yeah.
So on that note, I want us to wrap up. And again, I just want to thank you for,
uh-huh.
you know, for the time, but, you know, for your gentle spirit. I really feel like you have a gentle spirit. And you are diligently doing work being done to help change the life on the outside for returning citizens. And so I just want to bless you, my brother. And I just, want
thanks.
You to just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, and please, you know, let me know if there's different ways that I can
right.
help you as you continue to do the mission.
Well, let me just say this. I just want to take my hat off to you, okay, because we all have the same mission, but we're kind of wearing different hats.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing things that I'm not doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, and yeah, you're doing things that I'm not doing because none of us can do everything.
That's right.
You know, so it's going to, like I said, it takes a collective effort. So I really take my hat off to you. I'm glad I met you at Georgetown when I was there.
I really
appreciate you and everything that you're doing for everybody.
Okay. Thank you so much. And I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're in different lanes, but we're all going in the same
yeah.
direction, you know,
yeah.
helping each
yeah.
other out. So. Okay, well, I just want to thank our listeners. In a minute, we're going to go to Nate Battle and this week's battle plan. Thank you so much, and
okay.
God bless you.
God bless you. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Again, thank you, Valentino. I love this show. And I love the variety of stories told by these returning citizens whose lives have been changed and now positively impacting ours. Something else impactful is our battle plan with Coach Nate. Whether you've served time before or never seen the inside of a jail, Nate gives our listeners practical and inspirational tools to navigate life's often very tough terrain.
Hey, you human. Coach Nate here with today's battle plan. It was Meryl Streep that said, "True freedom is understanding that we have a choice in who and what we allow to have power over us." Many times power is given away, not necessarily taken, and that applies truly specifically in the case of what others' opinions of us are, what others think of us. I heard it said that what others think of us is none of our business. Many times, if we take into account, dwell on, think about, focus too much on what others' opinions are of us, we give away our power. We become defeated. We feel rejected. We can hinder our progress, our ability to achieve, simply because of what we think others think of us. We don't know why they think or have their opinions, and it could have nothing to do with us and everything to do with themselves. So it's important to focus on those things that you do control and those things that matter. And in your freedom, that leads itself to creativity, problem solving, finding solutions. You have a choice. You can choose to focus on what other people think, their views, how they feel, which can be influenced by the last thing they ate. Or you can choose to create your own feeling based on what you are choosing to focus on, what you know to be true within yourself, whom you know you yourself to be, whom you are, and you know it better than anyone else because who you are, how you were created, was planted inside of you. You've known yourself longer than anyone else, and that's where your freedom from oppression, from the views, opinions of others that can hold you down and hold you back. Break free of that. Choose to be who you are, not what others think you are or to be. Until next time, Coach Nate here. Live your best life on purpose now.
Thanks, Nate. The prison industrial complex, or PIC, is a term used to describe the overlapping interests of government and industry that uses surveillance, policing, and imprisonment as solutions to economic, social, and political problems. The PIC is one of the fastest growing industries in the United States, and its investors are on Wall Street. According to reports by human rights organizations, I'm naming just a few factors that increase the profit potential for those who invest in the PIC. 1. Jailing persons convicted of nonviolent crimes and long prison sentences for possession of microscopic quantities of illegal drugs. 2. The passage in 13 states of the three strike laws, which is life in prison after being convicted of three felonies. 3. The passage of laws that require minimum sentencing without regard for circumstances. 4. A large expansion of work or labor by prisoners, creating profits that motivate the incarceration of more people for longer periods of time. Okay, why do I bring this up? The Mission Possible work of Mission to Mobilization is about changing the perception of returning citizens. In sharing this, I educate you on how many returning citizens were imprisoned and why life post-incarceration has over 38,000 collateral consequences to increase their return to prison and profits for stockholders. Hey, okay, we're just talking. Our approach is education. I believe as you are informed about the companies that hire or do not discriminate against those with criminal records, your buying and shopping choices will speak about what you value. I know statistics show when you participate in workshops that simulate the challenges of returning citizens, you are more compassionate and influence company policy. And when you see how easy it is to help, you too will make our communities friendly and more welcoming for those coming home. Buy for returning citizens, walk a month workshop, and friendly faith communities is how we are making the mission of change perception possible. This week's proverb says, "It is atrocious when judges show favor to the guilty and deprive the innocent of justice." Love mercy, live graciously, and be a part of this change. This is Mission Possible, and I'm Sheila Murphy. Visit Mission to Mobilization for more information about our work, and visit NateBattle.com for today's battle plan. Until next time,
create your battle plan
and make your mission possible.